Morgan Miller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absentee members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is a Pastor John Carrier from the Lutheran Campus Center in Winona. And after the prayer, remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Morning. How you doing?
Let us pray. Sovereign of the cosmos, bless those who govern. Today, as America celebrates President's Day, we pray for the President of the United States, George W. Bush, and the President of this Assembly, James P. Metzen, and all of our former presidents of this august body. All-powerful one, bless those in whom have been entrusted great power to wield this gift with great caution and great courage. Creator of all that is, bless us with care for the earth, the water, the land, the air, on which all life depends. God of every land and every people, bless us to remember all those whose lives we affect. In your wisdom, you have made us who we are. Bless this assembly with the insight and wisdom to recognize your presence in all whom we meet. Especially open our eyes to see our common humanity and the need for truth and humility. Giver of every good gift, lead us to share your gifts, especially with those who have too little. Let us not be content to work for the common good, but empower us to strive for uncommon goodness. God of justice, bless this assembly with a hunger for what is fair and right. You who see all that has been, all that is, and all that is to come, grant this assembly vision that is broad and long. All this we ask so that in serving here, we may form a better Minnesota, a better United States of America, and indeed a better world. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice message here.
Thank you.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Wartman, Pappas, Parasol, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. A quorum is present.
Quorum is present. First order of business is executive and official communications. They are printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the adoption by the House of the following House Concurrent Resolution herewith transmitted. House Concurrent Resolution 1 relating to adopting deadlines for the 2007 regular session. Signed, Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator. Senator Pogemiller.
I move that we lay the message on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Fifth order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. One or two, yeah.
Well, the appointments, first, let's lay the
These are resolutions. Senate Resolution Number 6, Senator Pogue-Miller, did you wish to lay that?
Mr. President, I move that Senate Resolution Number 6 be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Now the
Mr. President, I move that committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. There are four. They are printed on today's agenda without objection. Second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a number of authors' motions without objection. Before that, there's one to be read at the desk.
Senator Wergen moves that the name of Senators Metzen and Waugh be added as a co-author to Senate File 298.
We will take these authors' motions as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate Resolution Number 40 will be referred to the Rules Committee. Senate Resolution Number 41, Senator.
Mr. President, I move to lay Senate Resolution 41 on the table. Senator Senjum, my intent would be to take that up on Thursday. 41. Move to lay it on the table.
On the motion to lay it on the table, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Next is Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5, Senator Pogue-Miller.
Mr. President, I move to lay that on the table, and Senator Senjum, the intent would be to take up the House resolution today on deadlines. So I'd move to put Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5 on the table.
On the Pogue-Miller motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
And then I have the Senate Resolution 42 to introduce. That's yours.
There's a resolution to be read at the desk.
Senator Metzen introduces Senate Resolution Number 42, a Senate resolution honoring those who have served as President of the Minnesota Senate. Whereas the office of President of the Senate was filled by the Lieutenant Governor from statehood through 1972, and whereas from 1973 to present, the Senate has elected its president from among its members, and whereas the president of the Senate exercises important responsibilities under the Constitution of Minnesota, Minnesota statutes, and the rules of the Senate and joint rules, and whereas since 1973, the office of president of the Senate has been held by Alec G. Olson, 1973 through 1976, Edward J. Garrity, 1977 through 1980, Jack Davies, 1981 through 1982, Jerome M. Hughes, 1983 through 1992, Ellen H. Speer, 1993 through 2000, Don B. Samuelson, 2001 through 2002, and James P. Metzen, 2003 to the present. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Senate State of Minnesota, welcomes and extends sincere thanks to all who have served as citizens of Minnesota as President of the Senate.
On the resolution, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogue-Miller.
Mr. President, I'd move a brief recess to recognize the former presidents.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogue-Miller and members of the Senate, we are fortunate today to have three former presidents of the Senate. The honor of the presidents and you, United States, and we feel we should honor our past presidents in the Minnesota Senate. So with us today is Senator Edward Garrity. He has with him his wife and a daughter. So, Mr. Garrity, we're... Senator Garrity. President Garrity. I saw him in the back room. I know he's here. I don't know, but I think we're going to give him a good round of applause. I see my dear friend, Senator Jack Davies, sitting in the front here. I know you're here, Jack, but give a nice round of applause to... Okay, and I know I saw Senator Alan Speer. Alan's to my left. Let's give Alan a big round of applause. All right. This might come under announcements later, but I'm going to say it now anyway. There's a cake in the back room, and there's coffee, and it's got presidents of the Senate on it. That's, I want you all to stop back there after the session and meet and greet our former state presidents. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, Senate will come to order.
Senate will come to order.
Then, Mr. President, do we want to take up resolution number 6?
What's that one?
Senate Resolution Number 6 is the resolution relating to attendance of members at standing committees and meetings. And the Rules Committee simply deleted the reference to NCSL and Council on State Governments so that there's no preference shown to any particular organization.
I think the motion is to take it from the table, the first one, then adopt it.
Mr. President, I move... that Senate resolution be taken from the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Now,
Mr. President, I move adoption of Senate Resolution 6.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Then, Mr. President, I move that House Concurrent Resolution Number 1 be taken from the table.
On the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I'd move adoption of House Concurrent Resolution Number 1.
On the Pogemiller motion. All those in favor
Mr. President.
Discussion. Any discussion?
Mr. President, that's the committee deadlines that members are familiar with. Move adoption.
Discussion. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Pogemiller, I do have a few concerns about the early deadlines and how it will be handled. And I guess one of the things I want to make sure is that members have time, while still in committee, where I think the real work needs to be done, to offer amendments. And what I'm concerned about with these early deadlines, when bills will be coming through very quickly in order to get on the floor and pass before the Easter deadline, is that committee chairs and staff will put together omnibus bills that many of us won't have adequate time to review. And I guess I want some commitment from the majority that we will actually have time to see these bills before they're put in front of us in committee and we're asked to do final passage on them in the same day. And I'm very sincere. I enjoy committee work. I think we do our best work in committee. And I want that opportunity for us to have adequate review of those bills before they have to pass out of committee to the floor. And so I'm okay with early deadlines as long as we know that we're going to have that availability of time to prepare amendments and actually do the work in committee.
Mr. President, So, Roebling,
I
think it's important to understand that the policy deadline is actually later. It's April 14th, so that should afford policy committees plenty of time to process those bills in an orderly manner. And the April 2nd deadline for the Senate finance and tax bills is not an unusually early deadline. And the focus in our committees right now should be on the budget. And so there should be plenty of time in the committees. You know, it's up to Senator Cohen and his divisions and Senator Bach to process those bills in a way where members have plenty of time to work on them in committee. So I would encourage Senator Bach and Senator Cohen and the Finance Division chairs to get to work in a way where members do feel they've had adequate time to deal with amendments on those bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess I'm more concerned about the omnibus E-12 bill and the higher ed bill and the transportation bill, which are all funding bills. And they do have policy included in them because, like, the higher ed bill is a funding and policy division. And so the way I'm understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they will have to be out by April 2nd as well, passed by the full Senate. And I'm concerned that we have enough time. And you know, I trust most of these chairs to do that because I know they work well with us. But I just want some assurance that we're not going to have a bill put in front of us in committee and say that, well, according to meet the deadline, we have to pass this out today, and there's no time to work on amendments in the committee.
Mr. President.
For the higher education bill, Senator, that's simply up to the committee. I would hope the committee would pass a separate policy bill from a funding bill, and they could work on their policy bill after April 2nd. It's up to the committee, obviously, if they want to put it all in one bill, but there's absolutely no necessity that all the policy items dealing with higher ed are in that funding bill. Matter of fact, the funding chairs have all been encouraged to narrow their bills as much as possible to funding matters. And there's always a little give and take on that, particularly in the human service area. But the idea is to have funding bills that are funding bills, and then policy bills separate from that. And it'll be up to each committee to make those determinations. And in K-12, I would think Senator Stump would want to have both a funding bill and a policy bill that Senator Wieger's committee would process. I think that's what's happened in the last few years, and I would hope they would do that again.
Senator Pariseau.
Thank you, Mr. President. If Senator Pogamiller would yield for a question.
We'll yield, Senator.
Actually, I find that there are several committees in which bills are being set aside with possibility of being included in an omnibus bill later on. And it would seem to me that a lot of those are some policy implications. Some of them are probably going to, obviously, policy drives money. And so if the budget's going to be done before policy gets a thorough airing and the policy's put off till later, how do you plan to adjust for that when you actually have to reconsider funding?
Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. President, Senator Pariseau, in some instances, policy does drive funding. You're correct. And the funding chairs and the policy chairs have been instructed to confer with each other and dovetail that so that you don't necessarily have to have the policy language in the funding bill, but they do have to coordinate. Because you can't have a funding bill that does not match up with whatever the policy bill is in the end. And so they're supposed to be talking about that. I presume they should be talking with their committee members about that also. But the focus is on the funding bills first. There should be a total focus on these funding bills first. And that is the way it used to be. It is only a relatively new phenomenon that all policy bills were completed before the budget bills. That's relatively new, like in the last 10 or 15 years. There used to be later deadlines for policy committees. And so I don't think it's going to be that difficult. It's just that policy committees and funding committees have to talk with each other. And in the higher ed and the transportation area, those are two areas where those committees will just have to decide how to separate the issues. And I would encourage them to separate policy from funding as best they can.
Further discussion on the Poger-Miller motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Poger-Miller, we're going to have to back up to resolution number 6. It does contain some money for the traveling, so we're going to have to take a vote on the board on this one. So, Senate resolution number 6 is before us. The secretary will take the roll on Senate resolution number 6. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the resolution is adopted. Next order of business is the calendar for the day. There are two bills on today's calendar. Secretary will give Senate File 372, its third reading.
Senate File Number 372, a bill for an act relating to crime, repealing the law prohibiting ticket scalping.
Senator Betzold.
Thank you, members. I did talk to Senator Gerlach. I did have some concerns last week about the fact that this particular bill goes more than just repealing a scalping law. There's a provision there requiring that the seating be printed on the tickets, and I had a concern about that. We talked about maybe it can be done somewhere else, but I do have that concern, and I think members should remember some of the debate we had last week on this. Thank you.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 15 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill on the calendar for the day is Senate File 302. The secretary will give Senate File 302 its third reading.
Senate File Number 302, a bill for an act relating to public safety, authorizing phlebotomists to take blood samples from DWI offenders under certain circumstances, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 1 nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Kubley. We're going to temporarily revert to motion. Senator Kubley, did you have a motion to make?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that Senate File 538, number 1 on general orders, be re-referred to the Committee on Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications, and it's okay with the chair.
Okay. Discussion. All those in favor of the Kubley motion, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business will be the consent calendar. There's one bill on today's consent agenda, Senate File 26, Senator Marty.
Mr. President, members, this Senate File 26 is a bill from the Board of Medical Practices. It's removing sunsets on advisory councils that they need. It's on consent calendar because there's another provision in statute that already does exempt all of these advisory councils from medical licensing boards from the sunset. So this is basically just dead language that we're removing.
Discussion on Senate File 26. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 26 its third reading.
Senate File 26, a bill for an act related to health occupations, extending the expiration dates for the Board of Medical Practices Advisory Councils.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next order of business. Next order of business is a Senate General Orders. Senator.
Mr. President.
Pogabeller.
I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purpose of taking up the General Orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I'd like to designate number 2 and number 3. Number 1 was sent back to committee just now, so 2 and 3. Thank you.
The committee shall be in order. The committee has before it Senate File 122 on general orders. The chair recognizes Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I move that when the committee do arise, Senate House File 122 be recommended to pass.
Senator, on the bill.
Members and Mr. Chair, Senate File 122 is a safety bill for children. It is a bill that will save a lot of lives. We have some details that have been passed out in some frequently asked or commonly asked questions. And what it will show is that children that are from 4 to 11 are required to be restrained, but they're not required to be in any type of booster seat or an approved restraint. When children are in these types of restraints, the survivability is much greater. The injuries that they are subject to is much less. Time in the hospital is much less. Costs are much less. The Section 1 does amend the current law concerning the use of the child restraint systems by requiring drivers of the vehicles that have seat belts to use approved child restraints for children. Now, it does not mandate booster seats. It mandates an approved restraint. Some vehicles are already built with these restraints in them as standard equipment. And some people will have to purchase child restraints, and generally those run from about $12 to $25 to $30, something like that. The number one killer of children over the age of 3 is automobile crashes. In 2005, about 458 children ages 4 through 7 died, and nearly 60,000 were injured in crashes. Approximately half of them killed were not appropriately restrained. Children who are less than 4 feet 9 and under 80 pounds and under 8 years old are especially vulnerable to this type of injury. So the federal government has issued a an encouragement for states to pass laws to cover these children. Any child under 8 years old is subject to this requirement, and once the state passes an appropriate law that does conform to their requirements, they will give a grant for education funds and for seats that are for low-income people, and it's based on population and the number of road miles in the state. Our state is looking at the possibility of getting up to $800,000 from the federal government. Again, this is not a mandate. It is just to use appropriate restraints. People have to learn how to use these restraints. There are instructions on each of these approved restraints. That's one of the requirements of getting an approved restraint. They also have on them the size of child that is properly restrained in there and that they're designed to hold. Once we qualify for that, those funds, and those funds were granted to the states under a federal law called Safety Lou, then they will be placed into the education fund and used to publicize this law and these requirements and how parents shall restrain their children. This is not a nanny bill. This is a bill that saves lives. This is something that we all know, that when you see children unrestrained in a car, that they are not being cared for properly. So this is something that we all need to be sensitive to, and I believe it's going to save a lot of children's lives and a lot of injuries, and plus it does save money because a lot of these children have longer hospital stays, greater injuries, and maybe more permanent injuries. A recent survey by the AAA showed that about 87% of the public feels that children 4 to 7 years old should be legally required to be in a restraint. I'm going to pass on any other comments. If you have some questions, I'll stand for those questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 122. Seeing no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of... Excuse me, before that, Senator Tomasoni.
President, thank you, Mr. President. Senator Carlson, I'm having trouble getting the bill up on my computer here. Is there a height restriction in this bill as well as an age restriction?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, no, there is not. There was a height requirement in an older bill. The federal guidelines say that if you don't use an age requirement, you should have a height and weight requirement. So we did not take that height or take on that height and weight requirement in this bill.
And Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, Senator Carlson, at what age do parents have to keep their children in car seats that are already required? Up to what age? Or is that a size requirement?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, the age is under 8 years old. So the federal law said that to comply with their grant purposes, they want the law to state under 8, and then we already have under 4 in Minnesota law is required to have child restraints, booster seats. There are also some other details that are below 4 as which direction they face and where they're placed. So the answer to your question is under 8 years old.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, under 8 years old in Minnesota or under 8 years old federally?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, the guideline is from the federal government, and it's under 8. And there's no federal law that mandates it. They just say that under 8, and you can apply for and be qualified for the grant.
Mr. President, are these under 8?
Senator Tomasoni.
Are these booster seats that we're talking about, or are they just the child restraint seats that we use for kids that are 2 and 3 years old?
Senator Mr. Chair, Carlson. Senator Tomasoni, they are not booster seats. They don't have to be booster seats. If a child is real small, of course, you look at the side of the booster seat and it will say the size and weight of the child. It only mandates an approved restraint. That approved restraint might be a harness. So it may not have to be a booster seat at all. there is a smaller seat that lifts up a child that you could call a booster seat. So the answer is no, you do not. It does not require a booster seat. It requires a child safety restraint.
Senator Higgins.
Thanks, Mr. President. If Senator Carlson would yield for a question.
He will yield. Senator Higgins.
Thank you. I don't know about other folks, but I always kind of worry about low-income folks and having having to tell them they need to buy possibly a new piece of equipment. Could you talk to us about the cost for, like, a booster seat, if that would be the thing that was necessary? And are there any mechanisms, any organizations that help low-income families to buy these?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, yes, there is a provision in the grant where 50% of the money that comes to a state can be used for low-income folks to help them buy seats. Plus, we have in the bill that some of the fine proceeds for not using seats can go into a fund to help people buy seats. And when we talk about seats again, they just have to be approved, so it's a restraint. And it can be from about $1,000, $12 to $13, up to perhaps $25. So they're relatively inexpensive.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Carlson yield for a question?
Senator Carlson will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Carlson, I noticed in your bill that you will require every vehicle, passenger vehicle, to require a booster seat for up to eight-year-old. What happens if we have a car traveling from another state driving through the state of Minnesota, where that state does not require booster seats? Will that law be equally enforced in Minnesota as it is for a visitor driving through the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I believe that it will be enforced, yes. I don't see the language that specifically accepts a person that is from out of state. And I believe that it is the responsibility of someone who transports children through the state to also comply with the laws in the state, just like you do for almost any other automobile law.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President and members, as we know, a lot of our income revenue comes through tourism in the state of Minnesota. And I was wondering, is there any provision that would perhaps establish some road signs on large freeways that come into the state to give notice that people driving in the state are required to have booster seats for children that are 8 years old or younger? Have you given any thought to include that in your bill?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, there is the 50% is for the 50% can be used for people that cannot afford seats. The other 50% is divided for education and what you would call publicity. So yes, there is some money in there that could be used for signs, just like other border entries where there are some signs that tell what Minnesota laws are.
And Mr. President,
Senator Limmer.
One last question. Senator Carlson, I noticed that the bill only deals with passenger vehicles, but it strangely omits things like limousines, school buses, other vehicles that I think would be equally needed to protect our children in the state of Minnesota. Why wasn't that ever included in your bill? These other modes of transportation that are on the same roads, they travel at the same speeds. The dangers are at least equal in those vehicles as in any other passenger vehicle. Why have we omitted businesses out of your bill?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, those are two questions. The first one is, any vehicle that has seatbelts, this is required to have and carry the child restraints. So a vehicle for hire, like a limousine, would fall under this law, as would taxis, as would the airport limousines, any of those. Now, when you talk about school buses, that's a different question. School buses are actually designed for survivability. The school buses have seats that are soft, the materials are selected, the heights of the backs are selected, the size of the openings are selected to maximize the survivability of school children. Plus, a school bus would have to have an array of seats to match the children that are small to the children that are larger. That's the practical parts of it. And then when you get to the safety part, school buses have an immense advantage in survivability of children. Very few children have died in school buses. Some have, yes. But the safety that could be gained from having seat belts in school buses might be offset in the cases of a school bus being upset, a school bus going into the water and being submerged, or a fire. And small children may not be able to unbuckle themselves fast enough. So unless we would have something that would automatically have a central unbuckling system, it may be more dangerous to have small children belted in. Personally, I like the idea, but practically we have the school bus cocoon, we call it, that's designed to help with the survivability of children.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Carlson yield?
Senator Carlson will yield. Senator Wergen.
Thank you. Senator Carlson, if I understood your answers to Senator Limmer correct, this makes anyone that's a tourist in Minnesota very vulnerable to a ticket for a law that they have no way of knowing could possibly even exist. So if they come to visit one of our fine lakes, they're here for a solid week. Unless they go buy ticket, go buy booster seats at one of our stores, they could get a ticket every day. I see it as a kind of an anti-tourism bill in a way. The second piece, anyone that lands at the Minneapolis International Airport and gets in a taxi cab with their seven-year-old, if they didn't carry a booster seat on the plane, maybe the taxi cab has one booster seat, but they may not have three for all three of the children that come with mom. What happens to them? Does the taxi get the ticket? Who gets the ticket for that infraction?
Senator Carlson.
Senator Wergen. Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen. Those are separated questions again. Let me take the taxi one first. They are included. A vehicle for hire is included. A taxi is required to offer a seat. It doesn't say whether it's free. I mean, you don't have to offer it free. You can rent it. A rental car company is also supposed to offer a seat for rental fees. The objective here is to have all children in a safety seat. And as far as people that are entering the state here on holiday or some other time, if they do get stopped for this infraction, and first of all, we have to remember, this is a responsible thing to do for your children, too. So if they're tending to be irresponsible and coming into the state and they get stopped for this, the law does allow a dismissal of it if they do purchase a child safety seat in the next, I think it's a couple of days. So it is an automatic dismissal.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, Senator Carlson, if I have a second grader in school and my second grader is going to have a birthday party, I pick up five children at school, my own included. I have permission from all of the parents to transport their children, and I have all five of the seven-year-olds in a seat belt. Am I committing a crime?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, I believe the level of an infraction here is a petty misdemeanor, so no, you're not committing a crime, because petty misdemeanor is not a crime in Minnesota. But yes, you are violating the law, because all children should be restrained in that vehicle. And it's one of those things where the parent, if the parent was transporting that same child, that parent would also be violating the law if they went to get them without a child safety seat. And today we have, most automobiles have about six places for either children or adults. And anytime that you pack a van or a car with more than the number of seatbelts that are in there, you're also taking a risk with those children.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. That's why I referred to five children, because there would be seatbelts for six, so they would be buckled in. Senator Carlson, if I have a seven-year-old and I have a six-year-old, and then I have two-year-old twins, one of them has to be in the front seat of my car in the center, buckled in. You can't fit a booster seat there. Would I then be subject to a misdemeanor every time I traveled with my own children in my car?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, you're going to have to give me those specs on your family again.
Maybe it's wishful thinking. I don't really have them. This is my hypothetical family. Senator Carlson, I said if I have a seven-year-old, a six-year-old, and two-year-old twins, you can put three in the back seat, but you have to put, with mom and dad in the car, but you have to put one in the center of the front, and a booster seat doesn't fit there. So I put my seven-year-old in the center of the front, properly restrained with a seat belt that's in the center of the front of the car. Would I be subject to a misdemeanor every time I traveled with my family because a booster seat can't fit there?
Senator Carlson.
Now, that's something that you will have to determine with the size of the child and what the seat belts and what kinds of restraints you can get for that center seat. Now, this does not, again, mandate the use of a booster seat. It mandates the use of a child restraint. And some restraints that are built into cars are approved with this under this law. In the case of having a large child in trying to fit them into the middle, it sounds like maybe a minivan might be in your future.
Mr. President.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, Senator Carlson, I would suggest that young families with four children don't necessarily have the financial means to instantly go out and buy a minivan should their car be 3 to 4 years old. Perhaps all they can afford is another 3 to 5 to 6 year old car that doesn't have the specific restraints built to weight, et cetera, like you're talking about, and you've just made that family that can't afford a different vehicle commit a crime every time they get in the car with their family.
Okay. Further, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Chairman. We keep changing around here. I keep forgetting. Members, this is real simple. If your children are of the age group that Senator Carlson is talking about, and you don't have them buckled in into the appropriate booster seat, and you get in a violent crash, the results will be disastrous for your family. Simply disastrous. Now, this is between $20 and $35 investment for your family. Senator Wergen, if you got six kids, run the math. I doubt that you're going to have six kids that are all in the age group that Senator Carlson is talking about unless they all come at the same time. And if you do, then you're going to have a minivan with this equipment that's already built into it. Members, this is the same thing as primary seatbelts, Senator Tomassoni. This saves lives. It's been proven time and time again. Members, let's get over it. Senator Carlson has done a wonderful job shepherding this bill through the process. He's made sure that low-income families, middle-income families, upper-income families all have access to get these for free. Besides that, if you want to get them really cheap, you go to a yard sale and you can pick them up for a dollar. How much is human life worth? That's what you have to ask yourself. Just vote yes. Senator Carlson's done a wonderful job here, and let's move on.
Senator Roble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Carlson, I just have one question. I noticed that the fine is not more than $50, but I'm wondering if there's any exceptions for the fees that usually go on our traffic citations. Would the family actually be paying $50, or would it be more than that?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I believe you said that your question is $50 per incident. Is that the question? I need clarification on your question.
Senator Roebling.
Senator Carlson, usually when someone gets a ticket, there's additional fees that are tacked on for, like, the county library program or the law library, and we've added a variety of different fees in the last few years, and I can't even remember how much those add up to, so that, like, when you get a speeding ticket and the fine is $100, it isn't really $100 that you're paying, and I'm wondering if those fees will also be applicable to this fine.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I'm sorry. Yes, they will be. Those are state fees, and I believe that it's somewhere on the order of $100 that, yes, will be tacked on to that $50. However, if the ticket is dismissed, then it goes to nothing. So it is a fee that will be tacked on. That's a state fee. That's not a local fee. That doesn't come with the ticket. It comes with the state that mandates that fee. So if the ticket is dismissed, then I believe the fee is also dismissed along with it.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Carlson, for the work being done on this bill. I co-authored this. This is the first time I rise in this body, and I guess I can't think of a better time to rise. Hopefully it's going to save one or two lives. If that's the case, then I'm very proud of my co-signing this. I bring the reality to it. All the other questions were very good, but over the years that I've spent out on the road dealing with accident victims and seeing the results of people not buckled up, I don't think we have enough time today for me to talk about all the maiming and all the dismemberment and all the things that I've had to deal with over the years, and also that terrible message that I had to deliver to people at night or during the day that their child was you know, riding along and was killed. Those are terrible things to have to do. A lot of good issues, though, when it comes to should we be hindering somebody for having to buy this, or when we come into the state from a different state. I remember going to Canada, and right on the sign going into Canada, it said, you will go with your lights on. If you don't have your lights on, you get a ticket. If you come into Minnesota, you see the seatbelt laws. We just have to step up to the plate and think about our kids, and I rise and in favor of this, and thank Mr. Carlson for the good work.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Carlson, I'm trying to imagine this. Is an 8-year-old like about the size of Senator Bonoff or about the size of Senator Moi or maybe even Representative Rukavina? I'm trying to figure out how little these kids are, because it seems to me that all these people are about the size of some 8-year-olds, and they all wear regular seatbelts and they all work okay. How little are these 8-year-olds? I mean, that they have to have car seats. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
All right. You don't have to answer. That's all right.
Any further discussion? Yeah, well, Mr. President, it seems to me that we're going down a... I mean, these. When I read this thing, it looks to me like it's exactly the same as my two grandkids that sit in these car seats, and these car seats aren't big enough for Senator Bonoff. And so that's about how big these little kids are. And so, but it doesn't say booster seats. It says the same thing as a 4-year-old sits in now. And so, I don't know if we need to change the age or if we need to change the language here, but it seems to me that these are exactly the same seats that these kids are sitting in now that are 2-year-olds and 1-year-olds and 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. And so I don't know that people will even fit in these things or even if they've got the ability to do this.
Any further discussion on Senate File 122? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Carlson that Senate File 122 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill before us on general orders, number three on general orders, Senate File number 463, Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 463 be recommended to pass.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman and members, this deals with the fees that a notary public may charge. By the way, every member of the legislature is a notary public, whether you know it or not. A notary public is not required to charge any fee, and for those of you who may not be familiar with the duties of a notary public doesn't necessarily determine that everything written in the document is accurate. The notary public's job is to basically authenticate the signature that is made to a document. Up until 1983, a notary public could charge up to 25 cents for providing a notary service. Again, a notary isn't required to charge anything, but if a notary chose to charge anything, a notary could charge 25 cents. That fee was raised to $1 in 1983 and has remained at that point since. Now, 4 years ago, the fee, the license fee that a notary public must pay in order to get the commission was raised from $25 to $100. Now, this is a cost factor to those individuals who do charge for notary service, and particularly local governments. County governments typically will provide a notary service and charge for that, but before they can accept a document for filing, they actually have to review the document and make sure the lines are filled in and everything's correct because they're accepting it for filing. And it may take a county 15 to 20 minutes to review that document, for which they can charge $1 for the notary service, when the county has had to incur the cost of $100 for that person to be a notary. So it is a fee increase from $1 to $5, but when you consider the fact that the cost of the notary commission went from $25 to $100, it's still quite in line with that. And as I say, the county officials do have to charge. They're losing money right now because they have to pay for the license, and they really cannot charge for something they, in some cases, have to spend some time on. But again, this only permits the fee. It doesn't require anything if a notary is not so inclined to charge. I do stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Senate File 463? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Betzel that Senate File 463 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business is Senate bill introductions. There's one change on page 13. Senate File 1046 will be sent to the tax committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is announcements of Senate interests. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my pleasure to let you all know that tomorrow is Bemidji Day at the Capitol. So when you see the black and red shirts going around, and anyone that looks like they might be from Paul Bunyan land, I hope you'll tell them hello and tell them they're welcome. We'll be in the rotunda from 12 to 1 if you'd like to stop by to say hello, and for a reception at the Kelly Inn beginning at 4:30. Thank you.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. On members' desks, I've had distributed a memorandum regarding guidelines for bills that propose advisory councils, commissions, et cetera. I would just want to call members' attentions to that. For bills that come to state and local government, we are going to be asking you about your council or advisory group that you are looking at those guidelines as you're developing that legislation.
Further, Senator Scheid.
Mr. President and members, the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee is going to meet tonight at 5:30 in room 12, and we should be done no later than 7:30. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, and Family Security meeting will meet at 12:40, so you can have time for lunch.
Senator Betzold.
The State Government Budget Division will meet at 12:45 again, so members can have lunch because the Rathskeller is closed today, so you may have to go off site.
Further announcements without objection, Senator Stumpf, Senator Ortman, Senator Saxog, and Dave will be excused from today's session all day. And a reminder that there's a president's cake in the back room. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. President. After conferring for a long time and negotiating with yourself, Mr. President, the Senate Business Committee will be meeting 1/2 hour after we adjourn today.
Senator, any other announcements? Senator Pogemiller.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I move that the Senate adjourn till Wednesday, February 21st, 11 a.m. Wednesday, February 21st, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.